Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Delling Pod. And I know I always say this, but I'm really excited about this week's special guest. It's Dr. Sam Bailey from Kiwiland. Before we go on, Sam, this is not a joke. This is actually true. See if you can guess what takeaway I had last night for my supper.
What takeaway? Did you have pavlova?
No. What do you get? What do you get from takeaway shops?
Kebabs and stuff.
They swim in the sea, and you eat them with the made of potatoes.
Oh, fish and chips. I'm quite good friends with Germ, and we were talking, and I said how I was going to come on your show, because you know, you've been recently on his show.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm so easy to do practical jokes on, it's not even funny.
But no, the thing was, I was actually, you didn't really say it in a very Kiwi way, I didn't think. I mean, that's meant to be the test, isn't it? How you say fish and chips. And it's like fush and chups or something. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I've got English cousins, right, James? And what they get me to say every time, you're going to crack up laughing, but they'll ask me to say pen, like what you write with, pen.
Yeah.
And I think that's hilarious.
What we'd normally use, we use pens for like sticking things. We don't write with them because they haven't got any ink in them. But okay, but before we go on to talk about, you know, the problem is there's so much we can talk about, isn't there? Because what you've done is you've discovered that everything we know about medicine and everything we know about diet is just a kind of, it's a massive con. It's designed to make us sick, isn't it? So it's a big subject. But before, I wanted to find out, how are you getting on in Kiwiland? I mean, have you had the death jab yourself?
No, never.
I thought the answer would be no, but I just wanted to check. Well, how is it possible to survive under the Jacinda Ardern tyranny?
It's surprisingly fine. It's like I can't work. I can't work as a doctor.
Right.
In lots of different professions you can't do. But what I'm doing now is fine. The main difference is really you can't go to restaurants and cafes without, but to be honest, there are people that are doing pushback and will welcome anyone so I go to those cafes.
Right.
So
there's a kind of underground scene, and I bet the atmosphere is really good. You feel like you're part of a special club.
Definitely. And it's cool because then you connect with other people who are just like you. So I think there's this misconception that people are missing out, like this FOMO is going on, but it's not really like that. It's happened so sort of suddenly that it hasn't really impacted on my life at all in any serious way. So I don't tend to go to gyms or anything like that. I would exercise outside, so those things don't affect me. And I just, on principle, I'm not going to go along with it. I would never, there's nothing that they could do to me to make me get the jab. No KFC, no amount of KFC.
Really? Yeah. Not even a sort of a bumper bucket of I don't know, with special spicy batter. Imagine they did spicy batter, like Popeye's chicken, which I don't know if you've ever had. It's got really nice batter. You wouldn't do it for that.
No, surprisingly, no. I have
gone on the record of saying that even if you were to pay me £10 million, I would not take the clot shot, and I really wouldn't. I mean, can you imagine? You could buy your volcano island and stuff, but every day you'd be you get the slightest twinge, and you think, "Oh my God, it's the death jab. I'm getting my myocarditis or my."
Exactly, and it's so much worse than that. That's just the start of it. Knowing the side effects, and we don't know what can happen long term. And I just recently made a video about where fetal cells come from and how they develop the vaccines, and it's really disturbing, James. There's so many levels to it of where you want to go, of the reasons why not to have it.
I almost don't want to talk about that aspect because members of my family have had it despite my blandishments, because they sort of say, well, I don't trust these experts that you're quoting, and they all sound a bit crazy, and you sound a bit crazy. And it's hard, isn't it?
But ultimately, I don't judge too much. I mean, it's hard within families, and I get contacted all the time by people where it's the relationship, it's husbands and wives, and they're splitting up over this,
Yes.
and you can't believe it that this is what it's come to. That's what I think is really awful. But thankfully, in my family, none of us have had the jab. And I mean, I don't go along with any of it, James. I don't do tests. I don't do QR scans. I don't do social distancing. I don't do masks. I'm doing none of it.
Yeah. And how hard is that? I mean, you said you can't go to the gym, you can't go to most restaurants. What, how restrictive is it? And do you get sort of like nasty looks or rude remarks from people or anything like that?
No, I don't know if it's just the way I am, but no, the thing, the most impact is probably masks, where everyone wears masks everywhere. But if you don't, people don't actually say anything to you, or I've not had it personally. And I mean, I had a baby during level 4 lockdown with full on mask madness. And this is actually kind of a little bit of a funny story, James, if you'll let me tell it. But
Yep.
the what happened was, I let my midwife know that I wasn't going to wear masks. A mask during the hospital, because you're supposed to wear a mask during labor. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. And then it somehow turned into Chinese whispers. And what ended up happening was I got 3 phone calls on the Friday when I was due to go into the hospital from my obstetrician, from the birthing suite, because what it had turned into was that I had said that I will refuse to see any staff member who was wearing a mask. And because they were all forced to wear these masks, they were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And by the time I got into hospital, I think the rumor had become this crazy anti-vaxxer, anti-mask wearing person's coming in to have a baby. And they were so good to me. They did not, they couldn't have, they bent over backwards, but I literally was the only person not wearing a mask.
That's fantastic. That's really good. But I suppose are you stuck on New Zealand forever now? I mean, there's going to be no escape, is it? It's like a prison island.
It is. Yeah, that's right. You can't. And I just learnt the other day that apparently I can leave, well, I guess, how do you leave? I don't even know, probably on a boat.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to go to Australia at the moment. I think you can't even come back to New Zealand unless you've been double jabbed, is the new thing. So I don't, even as a New Zealander, I don't know how this is going to work. So, yeah. It's
Do you
crazy.
think, because see, the problem is I've got you're my first captive Kiwi. I haven't done it's shaming. I've got so many Kiwi fans and followers, and I love Kiwis, and you're the first one I've spoken to about this, from Prison Island. Do you think that Jacinda got into power by with one of those Chi-Chi Dominion voting machines? I mean, or do you think she was legitimately this dictator was legitimately elected? I mean, do people like her?
Oh, sorry, James, it's a little bit, just the bandwidth isn't great.
Yes.
I
No, mine
missed
went
what you were
funny as well
saying.
then. No, I'll ask you again. Do you did Jacinda Ar Ardern get legitimately elected, or did she cheat with Dominion mo voting machines?
How far down the rabbit hole do you want to go? I don't know. Apparently she did, but I mean, it's all very strange. The people, apparently, lots of people voted supposedly for her instead of voting for the Greens because they were concerned about what the Green Party was going to do. So they were trying to keep the Greens out. But I don't know, James.
No.
I don't vote, so I couldn't really say.
Yeah, no, it's a
I'm
mystery, isn't
fairly
it?
normal.
Because you think about it, you like mine was really into my World War II history. People used to say that the Aussies were tough, But the toughest soldiers of the lot were the Kiwis. You know, they were absolutely just hard as nails. And you think, you fast forward in time to now, and you see everyone sort of, well, apart from you and your a few friends in the right cafes, wearing masks and surrendering to this kind of fascism, or even welcoming the fascism. Yeah, actually going, oh, we love Jacinda, we love her horse face. And you're thinking, what's gone wrong with your country?
I've thought about it a lot. And I'll just really quickly, the thing that really struck me, it really upset me actually, was during the very first lockdown, and I went to the supermarket for the first time. And how, so at that time I went, and there were queues, massive queues, and you all had to wait 2 meters away from each other. And we didn't have mask mandates, but we had this social distancing enforced, and you're only allowed in a certain number at a time. We were one of the strictest lockdowns in the world from the get-go. I remember I was so disturbed because, probably like you, I've read my history, and it just reminded me of what had happened in the Soviet Union. And I thought, I went home and I cried. I thought, this can happen anywhere if it can happen here. And I think New Zealanders are, where I don't want to use the obvious metaphor, but I'll get hassled endlessly for it. But I think that we're a small country, and people just look to nanny state, to the government for their advice. And it really, we've never had anything really bad happen to us before. And I wonder if that's part of it. The people that were questioning things very early on came from the Eastern Bloc. They came from places where Bosnia, and Americans as well, really pro-liberty and pro-freedom. And, I was one of the first doctors to kind of speak out. And I was wondering, where are all the other New Zealand doctors? But you realise that it's just, they've never seen this before. None of us have, really.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me about, we're finally coming to the chase here. Tell me about your journey, your medical journey. Because I imagine when you qualified as a doctor, you believed all the kind of, you're trained basically to be a dispensing agent for Big Pharma, aren't you? That's the deal when you train.
yeah, you are. Yeah, and germ theory and all of that. Yeah, and I was probably, I was asleep. I'll be honest. I was very much thought that was all right and the thing you should do. But I guess for me, my story is that when COVID came. So I was, at that time I had a small YouTube channel and I was making videos on topics, and people would keep asking me to talk about things like masks, do masks work, social distancing, that sort of thing. And I initially felt really reluctant to talk about it because I thought, I don't know about this. And I thought, okay, I need to do my homework. So I started getting obsessed, probably like you, like most people. I was stuck in my little den and I'm just reading as much as I can to try and understand what was going on. And essentially it was Andy Kaufman, one of Dr. Andy Kaufman's videos that first kind of triggered something with me, because you have that sense in your gut that something's really wrong, but you can't put words to it. And that was really in the first, just before the first lockdown. And he talked about that viruses might not exist. And I was like, whoa, yeah. I've never heard anything like this before. But kind of what he was saying made a lot of sense. And then I found Virus Mania, the book Virus Mania. And at that time, it talked about all the different pseudo pandemics. And so avian flu, bird flu, and it works all the way through from, the beginning of germ theory, so Pasteur and all that sort of stuff. And for me, it was like a lightning bolt. It just completely woke me up, and lots of things really started to click together at that point. And anyway, so then I started making videos about these themes on YouTube, and I started getting more and more of a following. And I wasn't doing that on purpose, it was just the way it happened. And then I made my video, which really upset the authorities. So I made this video about the New Zealand situation, because I had this insider who told me, who ran one of the PCR labs, And she told me that what was happening is that the Ministry of Health would inject funding, and then there'd be a whole bunch of, you know, cases, and then they'd switch it off again, and it would, you know, the cases would go down. And this was just like what they talked about in Virus Mania. So I thought, oh, I can't sit on this. So I made a video about it. And at that time, I also talked about vaccines, and I said I wasn't going to get a coronavirus vaccine when and if they come. And anyway, what I was doing, so I was working at that time as a doctor, doing clinical trials research. I also was making a TV show as a presenter for a TV show. And within a couple of weeks, I had an investigation by the medical council. I got an email from them saying there was all these complaints and that they were going to, I'm being investigated for spreading misinformation, or no, causing public harm. That was the first thing. And then I got a phone call from the lawyer from the TV show saying to take down the video. And I said I wouldn't, because I believed what I'd said. And then they said, well, just take out the bit about vaccines. And I knew that I had stepped on this landmine. And that was kind of my real crossroads moment. What am I going to do? And I decided I can't have someone controlling my speech, what I say, what I think. So I said no. So I got sacked from there. I got sacked from a job that I'd had for 12 years as a doctor. And then I've had this ongoing medical investigation. It was smeared in the press, and it was very coordinated. And you know, when you kind of really stumble on something, that it's not just an accident that this happens. It's really trying to discredit you. And but I just carried on and made more and more videos, and it's been a, for me, it's this wonderful journey. Actually, I felt like I finally feel like I'm pulling back the curtain on all the stuff that I used to believe in.
You become a legend. You become Dr. Sam Bailey, whereas before you were just Dr. Sam Bailey. Has your income taken a hit, or have you been okay on that front?
It's been funny because, you know, you can obviously earn an income through YouTube, and I wasn't working heaps. I was only working part time as a doctor anyway. But I've sort of been a little bit smart about it too. So I've kind of, as the censorship cranked up as well on YouTube, and I thought, how am I going to keep going with this? And then I started my Subscribestar. And then I became an author for Virus Mania as well. Yeah. That was, again, one of those serendipitous, you know, when you feel like, I don't know, the angels like are kind of helping plan. You. Pardon?
A divine plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It totally is.
Yeah.
And I just, again, that wasn't from me. The author reached out to me, one of the authors, Torsten, and he said, Sam, do you want to interview Klaus, who's one of the other authors, and on your channel? I said, yes, please. And then we got on so well, and he said, do you want to be part of the book? And I'm like, oh my God, this feels like it's a dream or something. And it really pushed me in a new direction, because I'd never considered kind of writing a book or before. So I've had that income as well, and Subscribestar. So no, it's been okay. And one thing, and it just blows me away, James, is the generosity from people, from complete strangers. You know, like I've had help with my legal bills. It really gets me upset just thinking, you know, talking about it, because people are so kind, and they just say, just keep doing it, keep going, and don't give up. And I'm not like that. I'm like a wee terrier. Nothing will stop me.
No, well, I'm getting that impression already. Yes. Tell us briefly about germ theory, because a lot of people, I think, don't know that. It hasn't even occurred to most of us that it's a dubious thing, or it might be dubious.
Yeah, it's a really good question, James. So I guess, so you've got germ theory, you've got terrain theory. My general quick summary is that germ theory is this idea of medicine, where you have one microorganism, so it could be a bacteria, a virus, parasite, causes one disease, and there's usually one treatment And I always like to tack on, there's one test as well. So for example, COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, the virus is the microbe, the disease is COVID-19, and the treatment is the vaccine and the PCR test.
Yeah.
So the idea within medicine is that it's all based on germ theory, and you're taught that heavily at med school. I had never heard of terrain theory until I read Virus Mania. And terrain theory is a different way of thinking of it. It's sort of like an analogy I like to use is that, say you had a whole pile of garbage. The garbage is there because someone, it's the flies don't cause the garbage. The garbage is there. It's your terrain, like your plant, the environment, there's something wrong with it. And then the bacteria come in and they help clean it up. They help you resolve from whatever this disease state is, but it's not the cause of the illness.
Right. Yeah. Well, so let me give you, I'll tell you what happened to me before Christmas, and see how this can be explained. So my son's girlfriend is at university, and so she got she took the PCR test, I think, and it was coronavirus. And then my son came, I picked him up from the station and he came back, and then he gave it to me at home, and then my wife, and it went through our family. Now that would sort of seem to work with the idea of germ theory, because there was a bug that the girlfriend had at university, gave it to my son, he gave it to me, but we were in different locations. So how does that work?
Yes, that's the most common thing I get. Just is explain illness. Essentially, there's lots of reasons why people get sick, and and the other thing which always makes me laugh, but is when you get illnesses, they're not, even within a family, they're not identical. They're not, usually people have different symptomatology.
Yeah,
and so the classic reasons why we get crook or sick is often it's nutritional problems, and a lot of infectious diseases were nutritional deficiencies were blamed on germ theory on infectious diseases. So for example, it could have been a multitude of things for you, James. Was it, I don't know what your guys' sleep was like at the time, what your stress levels were, the food that you're eating. There's also environmental toxins that we're exposed to, and polio is a classic where, if you know about the associations with DDT, environmental sprays that was used, and you can trace how these, there's a pathophysiology in terms of why this happens to people. I'm not sure of all the details of what happened to your son and your wife and you.
Yeah.
But there's other explanations for why people get sick. And I really think too, we underestimate the impact of psychological stress and that we're under, and how it can make us unwell.
Yes. I mean, I'm completely open-minded on this. So I'm, because this is, there are so many rabbit holes, aren't there? And the germ theory versus terrain theory rabbit hole is not one I've really gone down yet. Mm. But I do know the power of the mind in affecting one's health is quite extraordinary. And I can see, for example, that there might have been a sort of psychosomatic reason why we were sort of expecting to catch it because the girlfriend had it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's another thing. My husband talks about this too. He doesn't get sick now. And because, we had young children, we used to get sick all the time. Yeah. And I think there is this thing where when you're expecting it almost, and I used to be kind of those typical, I'd be constantly watching the the kids' hands and worried that I'm going to pick up, and I didn't like it when they'd have a snotty nose or something. And now I'm just totally relaxed. I don't get sick.
Right, that's good.
Vitamin D deficiencies and things. And it's also funny because even with, say, influenza, the real thing that triggered me actually was in Virus Mania. They talk about the flu experiments, the Spanish flu experiments, and those are really interesting if you've ever...
No, tell me about them.
So really quickly, they did these very interesting experiments on about 50 sailors and people that were in the prisoners, so prisoner studies. So part of their deal of getting out early was that they had to partake in these experiments. So what they did is they took them to these hospitals where all these patients are dying, and these are young people. They're very, very sick, and they would, and their illness would happen quite quickly. So within the first 3 days, they would cough on them like five times. They would get the snot of the patient's nose and rub it and put it inside the snot inside the nose of the prisoner. They would even take blood samples and inject them. And none of the patients got sick. None of the prisoners got sick with anything. So there was no transmission proved by these experiments, despite these patients being incredibly unwell. And they don't repeat those studies, obviously, now because they would never get ethics approval. But they're fascinating because they did it. There are multiple examples of them where they tried to do it and they couldn't do this. And and because, like everyone, I grew up with all the ideas of, you know, you need to wash your hands and always keep things clean. And that's important, but it's actually it's the quality, why there's been such an improvement in our health is not really to do with germs. It's to do with our nutrition. It's to do with our quality of our water, the general, the sanitation in terms of keeping things off the street where you're not living in squalor. But it's amazing how people always come back, and you can go through all the major epidemics and see that of how the standard of living has improved our health.
Yeah, this is going to be really hard though for so many of us, because we're all brought up with stories, aren't we? And stories are our way of kind of planting images in people's heads. And I remember being taught at my prep school about Edward Jenner and about dairy maids and why they have special, why they had lovely complexions, because they've been exposed to cowpox. And then he started taking, and that's how he stopped smallpox. These things are very hard to get rid of. And I think most people, I mean, even now when I tell people that, I talk about the clot shot and the death jab, and then I say, if I could have my time again, I wouldn't jab any of my children at all. And they say, well, what about, what about this? What about, I say, no. But most people really can't grapple with the idea that vaccines are not a good thing. So just explain to us why they might not be.
Why aren't vaccines a good thing?
Yeah.
I guess I come at it from two different ways. So I was heavily vaccinated all the way through, and even till probably 2019, I still was getting my flu shot. And then but I'd never looked at any of the evidence for whether these things work. And when you actually look at it through scientific lens, there's no evidence for their effectiveness, and particularly, for example, with the flu shot. What I've come to now, James, and this is more further down, is that I've never seen any scientific evidence for the existence of viruses. So, so the reason I would never take a vaccine is because what are you taking it for? But what can vaccines do to you? Just on a basic level, in terms of the aluminium levels, when you look at what, for example, the childhood schedule is for the US, how much aluminium is in, and this is a toxic heavy metal, it's basically by the time they go through the childhood schedule, they get over 4 grams of aluminium. And that's just one part of it. We have seen an explosion of autoimmune conditions, and they'll list as to why this has happened, every other reason, but there's no looking into, well, our vaccines, that's an obvious change, particularly since the 90s, really, when they really ramped up the number of vaccines that people were having. I think it depends where you're coming from, and if people really do dig into things like MMR, other types of childhood vaccines, I don't see any evidence for it. And it's the same idea of just germs in general. I think once you take away that fear of them, that they're going to cause disease, you look at life so differently. You focus on the things that you can actually change, and that's things like the quality of your water, what you're eating. So many of the chronic diseases that we suffer from are nutritional deficiencies, nutritional diseases. Diabetes, for example, is essentially a nutritional problem.
I was going to confess to you, Sam, that one of my one of the effects of the pandemic, the fake pandemic on me, has been that I now wash my hands much less. defiance of the- So I go to my Pilates class, and that Pilates teacher, after the class, she sprays all the mats with with this kind of stuff. And before the class, if you don't wash your hands before, you kind of get told off, and you say, I hope you're going to wash your hands. And it's like being at kindergarten. And you want to say to them, look, this is not transmitted through touch. I mean, how much, what are people doing to their hands with all this, with their skin, with all these, they must get really rough skin and worse.
Exactly. I mean, it's terrible for your skin, especially in the alcohol sanitizers. I mean, it dries your skin out. It essentially, you have that lovely protective oil, natural body oil layer, and that just strips it. So basically it's much easier to get little nicks, little cuts in your hand, and then you get inflammation. And I mean, it's just, it's not good. And we don't need that.
Do you think there was a golden age between, because like we're taught about the past, that people died in droves of, well, they did. I mean, you only have to look at sort of Victorian families and the number of children that they lost, and they got used to death in the way that we're not used to death, which is, of course, one of the reasons why the whole pandemic scare was able to take hold. People like thought, well, I'm not supposed to die ever. And suddenly people are dying, therefore we must close down civilization to deal with this terrible death problem. But the past, people did die of stuff, and then we're taught that sort of modern medicine came in and saved everybody. When was the sweet spot between the period where we should be copying?
Yeah, it's a hard one, James, because I think the medical system has been so interfered with. I don't know if I can give you a satisfactory answer. I mean, it's sort of like when the Flexner report came in, and again, it was very much I liked the concept of where there were lots of different types of health practitioners, and it wasn't so heavily regulated. I think they were basically trying to get orthodox medicine in there so that they get the most money and push out kind of more of the natural healers, and there isn't that sort of organic. I don't know if I've got a good answer.
It was too complicated a question. Okay, but we know, don't we, that at about the beginning of the 20th century, medicine got hijacked by the Rockefellers.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they wanted to, let me get this right, they wanted to push oil products, find new ways of selling oil byproducts, and they they basically hijack the medical system and impose this kind of allopathic system of is that roughly it?
Yeah, essentially, yeah, and you've got I think again it's complicated. You've got lots of different factions trying to get in there, and you've got basically pharmaceuticals, like early pharmaceutical big pharma, because this is the interesting thing with germ theory is that you've got, it's basically this perfect model of selling. Selling products. So you've got big pharma in there, you've got the medical doctors themselves, they get paid for this model, and it's very passive as well. With terrain theory itself, you have to take responsibility for your health. You don't go to someone who basically tells you what's wrong with you and then gives you the magic bullet to fix it, which costs, you know, some money. Yeah. And there's only a certain select group of people that are allowed to do that, you know, to give you the magic yes. prescription.
Yes. No, my three favorite words from the New Testament are when Jesus says, "Physician, heal thyself," because I reckon in those three words, there is the clue to everything to do with our health, that it's yeah. in us. It's not from outside.
100%, James. And we do. And it's sort of nature's cure. I think medicine's got it all backwards. And the doctor's role is to teach you how to be well. It's not about giving you stuff. It's about the teaching of how to help you. I don't see the medical system continuing the way it is. It's so broken. And I think COVID in some ways has been a blessing, because for me even, but just personally, I think it's revealed to me so much about how it's so, I couldn't, you knew something was wrong, but you couldn't kind of put it all together. Mm. And now when you see the bigger picture, you think this can't go on. It just can't. The system's broken. And we need, and I don't think it's just health. I think it's the same with education as well. These are broken systems. And it's how do we forge a completely new way of thinking and dealing with our health?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of us, it's been an awakening. It's been an apocalypse and an unveiling for so many yeah. of us who previously would have thought, you know, what we were taught at school, what we read in the newspapers. And lots of people have discovered things like about diet, that yes. so much seed oils, for example. I think a lot of people had no idea before that vegetable oil and stuff like that, stuff that's sort of chemically extruded or whatever, you know, however they get these oils, that is actually not good for them. And now I think people are waking up to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just taking back control in all these areas of knowing where your food comes from and knowing that the food, the vegetables that you buy at the supermarket aren't the greatest. You know, it's horrible. But when you, again, look into big food and you see how you're getting where this food comes from, you realize that all of this, food is thy medicine, and you have to be careful about what you're putting in, because there are toxins everywhere. And yeah. I mean, I just learnt more recently, I didn't realize that about pumpkins, that this is in New Zealand, and probably it's the same in England too, but what they do is they so the pumpkins, that once they're all ready to go, they basically spray them with glyphosate, and then so that it just kills off all the green leaves around them. So then they can just, you know, shovel them the pumpkins all up. And you think, gosh, I didn't. And they just use it wholesale. It's dreadful.
I had no idea.
So now I won't buy pumpkins. Yeah, yeah, and there's so many examples like that. Carrots, you know, potatoes, they just spray them with Roundup to get rid of the stalk, so it's easier for them to harvest. And
I didn't know this, because actually, this is how different I was even 2 years ago. I used to curse the fact that there were regulations stopping me using the ultra strong weed killer that I wanted to use, because why not? You know, I like, you know, if you, we need to kill stuff in our gardens. Actually, I still think there's an argument for that. But the wholesale use of glyphosate, because you look at a pumpkin and you think, well, it's got thick skin, so whatever bad shit there is out there, you know, it's not going to get on the inside. But if you're saying that that's what they routinely do, don't tell me that how is the New Zealand lamb industry? Don't tell me that's full of.
No, we're lucky. Things. Yeah, so much of we're very lucky here. The meat that is still, they're all grass fed, you know, sheep and cattle and things. It's not, we don't have to worry. I mean, pigs you have to be careful with, if you eat pork, you know, that they're not in those cages and things, that they're free farmed. But yeah, and because I could never understand it too. I mean, this is just the naive side of you where you think, oh, why is organic vegetables so expensive? And
yeah.
And there's a reason for it, and I think it's trying to eat things in more natural ways, so that they're raw, that it's more healthy for you, and also looking at fermented type foods as well, which helps the body. But there's so much to it. It's how far you want to get into it, but I think
I'd love to know your top tips on how to, you know, what are the, you know, the five things you should do or whatever.
Yeah.
Six.
Okay.
Seven.
Yeah. Okay. So number one is water. And I think we don't actually think about it enough, but you have to really, we have problems in New Zealand with high nitrosamine levels in the water, and nitrosamine is associated with bowel cancer. So a good thing to do is to I made a video on water actually about a reverse osmosis filtration system, which completely gets rid of the nitrates and filters them right down. So totally know where you get your water from, and because we are so much water, and it's key. Number two, so general nutrition, I think I don't recommend a particular diet. I just think eat what you like to eat, but make sure it's very good quality. And if you can, grow it yourself. And I know that's not possible for everybody, but that's what I do. Number three is avoiding toxins. And so toxins to me are things like cigarettes, vaping, alcohol. I drink alcohol, you know, once or twice a week, but I think it is a toxin, and you just have to be realistic about its effects on your body. General toxins, so again, you're just trying to cut down on things like the glyphosates, what your exposure, you know, through your food, what you eat. You've also got air pollution, so just being mindful of where you live. You look like you're in a country area, James, so you don't have to worry.
Yes, yeah. I'm surrounded by, I could always be in New Zealand because I'm surrounded by sheep and I like eating them.
Yeah.
Especially the livers. Yeah. Lamb's liver.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Good. That's high in iron, yeah. So sunshine, you know, getting your vitamin D. And being connected, socially connected with people. And I mean, this, I know it's so basic, but it's just we are such a lonely people now. We're isolated, and it's really, we've lost that connection with others. And I think it's really, really important to have some sort of social connection with people, you know, laughter and things like that. And what would be my final thing is just exercise. And I think it's, again, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a gym bunny or whatever. I just think you've got to get out there. You've got to go outside every day, walking, doing something physical. And yeah, those would be my general top tips. Getting good sleep. Sorry, sleep is another very important one.
Of course. Yeah. The problem about sleep, I had a year and a half of the purest insomnia, you know, when some nights I wasn't getting any sleep at all. And the problem about that is that, you know, sleep is really important, really, really important. And your awareness of how important sleep is haunts you throughout the day, and all you're thinking about is I need to get some sleep because I'm setting up store for future. This is going to be a disaster. I'm going to reap the whirlwind. But it's hard to get to sleep if you're obsessed with it.
Oh, definitely, James. How did you overcome it? Do you know why you weren't sleeping?
Yeah, I reckon that it was the beginnings of my chronic autoimmune problems to do with Lyme disease or whatever. Although I'm not even sure that people obsess about the tick bite and stuff and about Borrelia and they start identifying the different co-infections and stuff. Actually, I think it's, as you do, it's about things like your lymphatic system isn't draining properly, that you know, it's a general health thing rather than a specific virus or bacterium. I think that was the start of it. It was, I had all sorts of problems.
I read a really good, I was sent actually this really good book recently, which was, it was about a New Zealand, he was an obstetrician actually. And his name's Ulrich Williams. And he, this is going back in the 1940s, and he became like a naturopath, and he set up all these health kind of retreat, I guess what you call them, like homes where people could live. And he would teach them how to basically eat again and live a healthy life. And these people had crippling, like horrible conditions. And it just, you know, he describes like these fungating tumors where you could put a fist through the hole and he would cure these people. It's astonishing. Like I can't even believe it myself, but it was, and he strongly believed in your diet. He was one for things like enemas, bowel enemas. But again, there's just a different way of thinking where you have, when you get sick, right? So when you get a fever, feel chills and feel unwell, like you want to go to bed. His perspective of it is that it's a healing crisis and your body's trying to flush out toxins. And basically his advice was you fast immediately, go to bed, let the fevers and things happen, have lots of vitamin C, so citrus drinks, lots and lots of water. And you're just basically waiting for time for your body to heal themselves. And, because the other thing, sorry, James, I think it's really important that people get hung up on is that you have to consider that pharmaceuticals themselves are chemicals. We are putting chemicals in our bodies all the time. And what does the body want to do? It wants to flush it. The whole job of the body is to get rid of chemicals. So as soon as you take a pill, it's trying to get rid of it because it doesn't want it in it. And I try and be pharmaceutical free and not, I used to, but I don't take things like Panadol. And if I felt unwell or a headache, I just let it happen. And I pay attention and I'm like, why have I got a headache? Rather than just taking something and being passive about it. I think about, what's happened? Am I feeling stressed? Is it something, you know, I've been looking at screens for too long? Just, you know, thinking about it, really, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. What would you do about, so I had a riding accident and I bust up my collarbone and ribs. And then I had a pin put in my collarbone, which I think I shouldn't have done. I think with hindsight, I would not do it again. Yeah. But it was quite bad.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
But then I got what's it called?
Sciatica or something.
I had a pulmonary embolism caused by the, you know, a reaction to the surgery. I mean, in situations like that, I mean, there's no kind of you're going to have to take rivaroxaban or some similar blood thinning agent, aren't you?
Well,
or not? No, tell me. I
can't really give you medical advice in this forum, but James, because the medical council like to watch me. But I think there's alternatives to things that you, so maybe we could chat.
Chat, but obviously I'm not on it anymore, so I don't care. No, I mean, I'll be honest, the only big pharma company product I've really got on with in the past, it was developed by Merck, I think in the early 20th century. And that's, MDMA. they let's not slag off Big Pharma completely. Sometimes they produce stuff that's really the bomb. But by the way, you mentioned water filters and stuff. Where are you on? I currently drink distilled water, and I know that what it can do is it, because it's got all the minerals stripped out of it. What it can do is strip the minerals out of you. Is that right?
Yeah, partially. I don't think there's any problem with drinking distilled water. It's again just focusing on making sure that your nutrition is actually you're keeping up with, you're getting those minerals that you would normally get as well from your water, that you're getting it from a food supply.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it. I really don't like being too prescriptive with people, because I think it's counterproductive. That's great. I think it's actually, if, like anything in life, it's what you pay attention to. And I think we don't really pay attention to water that much. No. We just assume that it's all okay. And and it's so important. Yeah.
Yeah. No, of course, it ruins you forever or else, because once you start drinking distilled water and you go to other people's houses and they give you tap water, and you can taste all the aluminium or whatever shit they put in it.
And completely. It's funny you say that. My kids, they are real water snobs now. We can't, if we go somewhere and then they're like, "Mummy, that water isn't nice." And I'm like, "Okay, don't worry. Yeah. Just flag it."
I used to be in restaurants like, "Yeah, I'll take tap water. I'm fine. I'm a man, you know. I'll just, you know, and it's cheap and I'm saving money." And now I think, "Well, I can't drink your horrible tap stuff." Yeah. It's just
I know. And it's simple, but yeah, I do. I've had this real thing about, for people just thinking about what you're taking, these pills that people are on, and our body's constantly trying to get rid of them. So it's like, do you really need them? And I'm not saying, please, I always get accused of saying you don't need medicine. I mean, I do, there is a place for medicine. And I think, you know, some of the amazing discoveries have been orthopedic surgery with trauma, you know, injuries with the wars. It's been that really can save your life. And but there's lots of things that are actually really bad for us. And we just,
well, where are you on things? So do you think on balance antibiotics are a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, yeah,
I think they potentially for sepsis, but I'm talking about like really, really sick sick. I don't think 90% of the time, or more probably 95% of the time, that antibiotics are used, I think it's the worst thing that they could be doing, actually.
Yeah. I mean, because we're told, aren't they, that they sort of save loads and loads of lives in the wars from people who would otherwise have died. I mean,
I mean, like anything, where are these control experiments? I mean, what you're taught with history is what they want you to know. It's not necessarily what happened.
Yeah. What's your, I mean, going back, the what do you think the bubonic plague was about, Black Death? What do you think really happened then?
That's a good question. I haven't looked specifically into the plague, but I would have thought part of the issue was with, again, the living conditions that they were living in. They had terrible nutrition. And I mean, I think you don't want to be around waste products. And I'm not, you know, sewage, raw sewage and things. And I'm not talking, microbes themselves aren't bad, but they do emit toxins that can kill us and make us very, very sick.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't necessarily believe in this, the pestilence like the Yersinia pestis model. But in fairness, I'd have to look back and see what was done. And that's every time, like, people ask me particularly about viruses and, for example, chickenpox, and I've never really looked into it. And when you really do, you see that, unfortunately, there was no evidence of, the chickenpox virus. And it's shocking, but it's, it's...
What did happen? What's the story there?
So, chickenpox is interesting because there's lots of So again, skin type rashes. You've got one of the things that interests me is how you had smallpox, right? And then it kind of, from a doctor's perspective, the difference between smallpox and chickenpox is that smallpox you get on your face mostly, and chickenpox you get on your trunk. And this is one of the, you know, the differences. But I wonder if it's the same condition, that it is actually, and again, you've got, I made a video about it, but there's nutritional problems with those as well. And the skin can only do so many reactions. It can, one of the things it likes to do is form, you know, pox. Yeah. You can get, you know, and lots of medications and things can create those same responses. So another one that I looked into was measles, and you know, that's possibly a vitamin A deficiency that causes those symptoms as well. So yeah, it's kind of it's interesting, because what I always try and say, because people accuse me of, well, what are you saying, that you don't believe in viruses? And so what I like to say is, I haven't seen scientific evidence for the existence of a virus.
Yeah. Well, I've just been listening to the audiobook of the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Book about Fauci.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it's an eye-opener when you realize the degree to which the AIDS crisis was essentially Fauci's invention. And when you discover that about HIV, that...
I know.
I mean, tell us a bit about that. What do you know about that, about the HIV thing?
Yeah, so we talk a lot about it in Virus Mania. Because it's, when you understand HIV and AIDS, then you understand COVID.
Right.
Because so many of the same... playbook.
It was the dry run for COVID, wasn't it? And
it really was, yeah. And I think so. It's a big topic, HIV, but essentially, the way I briefly like to explain it is that HIV really started because, so you had gay men that had very unhealthy lifestyles. And they really, they were essentially, a group of them were addicted to taking poppers, so the amyl nitrates. And these are highly, the reason they use them is because it dilates the anus. And when they take them, they're carcinogenic. And so they were drugged up to the max. And anyone does that, they'll blitz their immune system. So you had a group of young gay men that became very quickly sick, and they clustered those all together, and they essentially came up with a new test, the HIV antibodies test. And like they have done with COVID, they announced these things by press conference. and that's what they did. And now there's interesting things with HIV antibodies, where there's all these different conditions that you can't have. If you have them, you can't test for HIV because they come back positive, even though you don't have HIV. But from one day to the next, people used to be diagnosed with things like tuberculosis or cancer, and then they had a new test, and then they became HIV positive. There's other really interesting studies, James, I don't know if you've seen them, but where they did a 10-year study, it was on heterosexual couples, who one was HIV positive and the other wasn't. And they followed them for 10 years, and none of them caught HIV, the couple. And I mean, how is this possible for something that's apparently so contagious? And there's other interesting things with HIV too, with the needle stick injury. Because let's be honest, as a doctor, I had needle sticks, and you get kind of paranoid, you're a bit worried, oh my god, you're supposed to get an HIV test?
Yeah.
And it's something like, it's this tiny 0.0008% or something, 0.0008% of people have ever caught HIV from a needle stick. And I mean, you think this is going on worldwide, how many people are getting needle sticks and nobody's catching this HIV? But the other thing, Fauci was heavily obviously involved with HIV and the AIDS, And there was the whole AZT fiasco. So AZT was the treatment, you know, that was used. And essentially it was killing, the treatments that they were giving to the HIV patients were killing them.
Yes.
And there was, we talk about in Virus Mania, I've just gone blank, one of the heroes of the 1950s, 1960s, as you know, stars. Oh gosh, sorry, this is embarrassing.
Oh, what, Rock Hudson?
Rock Hudson, yeah. About what happened to him, and it was just dreadful. You know, he was basically killed by these treatments, and you can see that now.
He took AZT, did he?
No, he was given another type of HIV treatment. He went over to Paris and was given the top treatment, and it essentially killed him. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting parallels with HIV and how they use the media, the involvement with Big Pharma, and again, it's being scared of having sex with people, contact, just like COVID, you know, this fear of this invisible enemy. I can't be around someone because they're going to kill me. It's a fantastic weapon.
Do you know, that was my first, I couldn't articulate it quite, but I was very aware. I was at university in the 80s, just when the whole AIDS thing exploded, and there were adverts on TV saying, "Don't die of ignorance." But actually, ignorance was exactly what these adverts were fomenting. And I'm sure it had an effect on my sex life. I'm sure I would have had more sex had it not been for Anthony Fauci. So when he finally, you may laugh, Sam, but when he finally swings, it will be another reason for me to, for the world to celebrate. All those shags that Anthony Fauci denied us on the basis of his lie. I mean, not to mention all the people that he's killed. I mean, AZT is a shocker, isn't it? It had the most appalling record. It's toxic, yeah. And it doesn't work.
Exactly.
A bit like the vaccines.
I know. And that's it. It's like we've forgotten our history, and it wasn't that long ago. But it's I think when fear is at play, it's so easy to manipulate people. And I think germs, my real thing I'm trying to push now with my channel and what I do is I think this is going to continue, these pseudo-epidemics, pseudo-pandemics, unless the concept of viruses is shut down. And, you know, that we're not thinking about, we realize what viruses actually are, as it were, you know, in inverted commas, they don't cause disease. And I personally don't believe in the existence of them, but I do worry that this will continue unless people really start to wake up to the truth about virology. And I'm just about to make a video on this, it's like a black box. People can't understand it. It's very technical, and most 99% of doctors don't understand it, and can't read a paper and make sense of it. And it's very hard to articulate to people as well. And so that's what I try and do. I don't know if it's badly, but I try and explain it to people in that way, so that to try and understand what they're actually doing, trying to pull wool over our eyes, because it's not what people think. I think that's why COVID's happened.
I was thinking that one of the real shockers, I think, that have really opened people's eyes in the last 2 years, is that people thought that doctors were trustworthy, intelligent, informed people.
Mm.
And actually what has emerged is that they are none of those things. And a doctor... Actually, I said, well, what is it about doctors? And see whether you agree with this. She said to me, a percentage of them are psychopaths, that psychopaths are drawn to being doctors because of the control they have over people's lives and stuff. But the other, the bulk of them are just people who were very, very good at absorbing large quantities of information quickly. And they're not applying critical thought to what they absorb. They just it just gets dumped in their brains and they kind of regurgitate it over their careers. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think too, I've made a video about this as well, about, you know, what a doctor's good for. And the reality is you have to appreciate they're just humans at the end of the day, and they don't want to admit it. But when they do personality tests on you when you're a first year medical student. And I would be so interested to look at those now. But we know that from these sorts of studies that a lot of doctors, why do they do it? They do it. They want a good job. They want income. And when it really comes down to it, they look to authority. The authority tells them this is what you need to do. And they do it because they want to pay the bills and whatever. And I feel the same. I feel ashamed of the medical profession, what they've done. But thankfully, people are seeing through it. And the trust in doctors now is rock bottom. And yeah. I'm not surprised by that. Because when you go to your doctor that you've had for 30 years, and then they're suddenly telling you, you need to take this vaccine, quick, you know, let's go outside and do this. And, you know, and you're a bad person if you don't, you know, you're really foolish, you're putting people at risk. And you can ask them the most basic questions and they can't tell you. They don't know anything about the way the COVID vaccine has been made, what it's doing, why we're taking this. I mean, it's endless, the problems with it.
Have you come upon any effective methods of undoing the damage? Please say yes, by the way. Undoing the damage done by the jabs. Any protocols that?
Well, I get sent a lot of different protocols. I'm really not sure, if I'm honest about it, James. I think one thing I kind of suggest to people is, I think the glutathione.
NAC
pathways. So NAC, I think, is really important. And there have been studies looking at that. I normally advise people to naturally try and to improve their detoxification. So processes like doing saunas, you know, sweat outs, if they exercise, you know, trying to get rid of the stuff.
Yeah.
But in fairness, I don't know, because I think it's still too early. We don't know enough. And I mean, I worked in clinical trials for a very long time. And I know that the problem is that we don't, often things, you don't see them for years. And hopefully we'll, I hope that a lot of these shots have been saline shots.
Yeah.
But
yes. Yeah. I think, because your website's had 20 million plus views, which is great. And but you're not Big Pharma. You don't have their budget. So it's David versus Goliath. But in a way, that's why we needed this horror. We needed all this to create the public awareness, didn't we? I think without it would never happen. It would have just been drip, drip, drip of this corrupt system.
Exactly. And I mean, obviously you're aware of the higher things at play as well, with, you know, the Great Reset and our dear leaders. But I think, I think in some ways, even though it's been horrible, it's been a blessing, because I don't think the way humanity was going, well, particularly, I just look at it from a health perspective, was right. And I'm grateful to have been woken up from a very deep sleep to see it as it is. And I think for a lot of people, it's been a shock. And, you know, one of the most common questions I get all the time is, how do you wake people up? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think everyone's slightly different in what they respond to. And I still have faith in humans and people and humanity, you know.
Yeah,
I think totally. Most people are good people. And another thing I thought about with health, which Ulrich Williams, again, sort of taught me, was, I think, having a spiritual element to your health as well is really important. You think that actually gives you something to kind of focus on and believe in, And he talked about that, where you, if you really believe that something, you're going to help yourself, you know, that God could help you. He had seen it. He'd seen examples of people being cured with that. And I think faith is really important.
I totally agree. It works. It works. Yeah, yeah. Just before we go, your fellow Kiwis who are the ones who haven't taken the jab, what would you say to them? Have you got a message of hope? Can one get on with life and not have one's career destroyed and survive under the Jacinda tyranny?
100%. Yeah, I don't doubt it for a second, James. Yeah, I know I'm an example. It's not like I set out to do this or anything.
Yeah.
But it's for me, it's been, I'm so happy that I'm on this path. It feels like I know what to do now. I feel like I've got the sense of purpose. And I've seen many examples of people that have, they've taken, and I, kudos to them. It is so much harder to say no than to go along and get the jab. That's the easy decision, the easy way out.
Yeah.
But I think I've seen people that have completely reinvented themselves and doing different things. And I think it's an opportunity, rather than feeling, oh my God, I've got to do this for my job. I think you have to remove the fear and go, what is the right decision if I remove the fear? And you know, I do believe in these little angels helping you and pushing you in the right direction, because
I'm totally with you on that one. So, but the fact that there are these cafes that you can go to work with like-minded folk suggests that they're not enforcing it so ruthlessly. There are no chinks in the armor.
No, well, I mean, they're deliberately, they're not going along with it, and they're getting vilified in the press. It's not easy for them, but there is definitely ways around.
But they're not being closed down by jackbooted police, is what I'm saying. They can keep.
Oh, I guess yeah. But it's uncertain. Yeah,
is it underground or is it?
No, it's open. Definitely, you know, it's very open, and more people, more businesses are doing that as well, coming out. I think what's wonderful, probably because we're a small place, there's a group called Voices for Freedom, and they are amazing. And I always encourage people to connect up with them, because they have all sorts of, they organise things like for children, because, you know, children can't do sport unless they've been jabbed at school or, you know, outside of school over the age of 12. And so they're organising all these sports for kids so that they can play sports and not be excluded. And there's you know, really good grassroots kind of organizations that are really getting cranked up. And so it's not like I don't have any FOMO.
No, that's brilliant. I'm really glad to hear that those kids are getting some sport.
Yeah, and it's what they need, and to be around people. I mean, homeschooling apparently has gone through the roof. Because of what they're trying to do, you know, the mask mandates now in schools. We didn't have that. It's only been recent this year.
Yeah.
So, there's definitely ways, and I think it's connecting up with people that are like-minded, because it gives you inspiration. You don't feel isolated and alone, like it's only happening to you. I know lots of doctors that have sacrificed their careers, you know, for the reason, and they're good. I they're all doing different things, but it's I just they inspire me.
Well, anyway, well done for you for all the stuff you've done. It's absolutely brilliant, and I'm sure you're an inspiration to many. Tell us where we can find your stuff and where we can get your book and stuff like that.
Yeah, thanks, James. Yeah, so you can follow me probably. So I am on YouTube. I'm only just on there.
Yeah. Fingernails.
Yeah. I'm not really trying. I don't care, to be honest, anymore about that. And Odyssey. I have my own website, drsambailey.com. You can find me, and you can buy Virus Mania on there. I've also made it into an audiobook, so you can listen to 15 hours of my Kiwi accent. If that does it for you. And yeah, and I'm also on Telegram, but there's apparently a fake Telegram channel of mine, you know, and it's so weird when people fake being you and then they copy all your posts and stuff. I don't understand why you do this, but so it's just the official one is Dr. Sam Bailey official as my official, one.
Right. Yeah. They'll just come up with new ones called Dr. Sam Bailey, you know, put official in it and people will go, oh, well, it must be real because it's got official in it. I mean, you know, how could it not be official if they've written official? Yeah. Well, Sam, I look forward to reading your book. And my dear, wonderful listeners, if you've enjoyed this, I hope you can support me too. I'm on Patreon, on Subscribestar. I've just joined Locals and the other one, Substack. Anyway, yeah, I'm there and I really appreciate your support. So thank you very much and keep doing it. And newcomers, yeah, come on, support me. Thank you. Sam, it's really great talking. What time is it in Kiwiland, by the way?
It's about 20 to 11. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, you can't go and have a swim now in your shark infested seas.
No.
No, because it's dangerous. Swimming at night is dangerous. So don't do it. Don't do it, Sam. Okay. Right. I'm going to have some breakfast now. Thanks a lot. Cool. It's been great talking to you.
Lovely. Thank you, James.